You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
Hey, buddy, you gonna eat that sausage?
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Tell me something, my friend.
Am I the only one around here who gives a shit about the role?
Ladies and gentlemen!
Your complete attention, if you please.
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another brand new episode of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. We took the week off last week.
Woo!
I said, fuck you, Justin, get out of here. I've had it
that's
with your
shit.
That's
not what happened. Don't lie.
I'm pretty
Don't
sure
lie
that's
to
exactly
them.
What happened. Is that not?
No.
It might have been. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 159 of the Epic Film Guys Podcast. And I, of course, am Nick.
And I am, of course,
some
other guy. And I of course, and I'm a horse of a horse, of course, of course. I, of course, am Epic Film Guy Justin.
I sucked a dick last night.
I don't know.
Come on.
That has to do with anything. No, you know who sucked a dick last night? The Giants did in their season opener. Against the fucking Jaguars.
Oh, wait,
football
is a thing again, isn't it? Oh,
football?
That thing that I ignore. Football is a thing again, right?
Football is a thing again. God, fucking Giants.
I'm
losing
sorry.
Our season opener once again. So, already off to a fantastic start just for me. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show. We've got a packed, and I mean a packed show. Packed. I just hit puberty. Packed. We got a packed show.
You remember Edward Furlong in Terminator 2. That's what you sound like to me.
You can't go around killing everyone. You're a Terminator.
Fuck you. She's a priority to me. God damn it. So,
you know, Edward Furlong is doing a convention in a few weeks. I might go just to see how fucking fat he is.
I found those pictures
like,
of him.
Hey, man.
I did.
You need to do the Epic Film Guys Fitness Challenge. I'd be like, I'll give him a shirt. Be like, here you go, dude. Here's some inspiration.
Does Redbubble make shirts that large? Oh, they do, because they make them big enough for me.
Yeah. He'll probably get it stained, though, within one day.
He will get it stained.
He'll probably puke
Why
up
is every,
himself
every time
if
I see
overdoses.
A picture of him, like, recently, it's always, like, his shirt is either ripped or stained.
It's stained, and he's always holding a bag from the convenience store. Poor Furlong. I'm not hating. I'm all for him getting better. I hope he gets better. Whatever. New Terminator's coming. I'm trying not to think about that. But yo, screw all that. Okay, so I'm going to talk about this as much as I want on the show, Nick. Halloween.
I thought you were going to talk
Halloween.
About something else. Something liquidy.
If I keep saying the word, it'll become October 18th and I'll be able to see it. I'm pretending like it will. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Sauce, who is not present during this episode because
Wait,
something happened to
he's
him.
He's not?
No,
check,
he's not.
Check sound.
No, see,
check.
He's there. He just checked in. He's in. He's here.
A little bit late on that response, Saucy.
This is because
we
the Saucy had
until...
to scroll down the page to find him.
We waited until 2:30 in the morning. The premiere of David Gordon Green's Halloween was at Toronto International Film Festival on Saturday this past weekend. And I was like, I'm doing it. I'm staying up anyway. I'm going to drink some pumpkin beer, which I'll talk about in a minute.
Ooh.
Nick's favorite thing for me to talk about. I just wanted to see reactions. I usually don't do this, but this movie is so important to me. And I haven't been this excited for a movie. Probably, if I had to say so, I haven't been this excited for a movie since The Force Awakens. I mean, I was really excited for it last year. But The Force Awakens was the last time like I was on edge, like, so excited I couldn't stop thinking about the movie. And well, reactions hit, and about 85% of them are really good. There are critic reactions, actual critic reviews up right now. If you look at Rotten Tomatoes, I know that Nick doesn't like Rotten Tomatoes and the tomato meter, but right now 28 reviews, 82% fresh. We'll see what happens when the film gets released. I unfortunately, Nick, read a few of the reviews and I spoiled myself a tiny bit, but it's Halloween. It's not very hard.
Hey, spoiler
Michael Myers
alert.
Puts a mask
Michael
on.
Michael Myers is
going
to stab people.
Exactly. So I'm just so excited about it. So there it is. That's
him.
It.
We'll be talking about
the new trailer briefly and epic previews at the end, just because even though the Sauce and I did do a special video review of the trailer last week,
it's up there.
I still have to have it on the main
YouTube.
Show. Still have to have it on the main show.
Hit YouTube. We are media whores.
We gotta be.
We're on every podcatcher under the sun. I actually just added the link to our Google Podcasts link, which we've had forever. Like, before Google Podcasts existed, I submitted the show to it, and then it got approved at whatever point, and they put it on there. And I never ever put the link in the show notes. I finally found that and put it in there. We're live on Twitch right now, live streaming the show, the recording, videos, all sorts of other stuff goes up on YouTube. We're everywhere. If we had fucking CB little ham radios sitting here, I'd be driving up and down the road, be like, this is Epic Film Guy Nick, over, you know? And then everybody'd be like, get the fuck off this channel. It's harassing me, yelling at me, spanking me, hitting me.
We're basically everywhere you could possibly think of.
Oh, I saw somebody moving around behind you. Is it
child,
the wife?
Child, which should be in bed now since it's 10:56 at night, and bedtime is 10:30.
This is what happens when they become teenagers. This independent streak starts to swell in them, and then they stop listening, and they're like, nope.
Well, you're going to hear, ladies and gentlemen, watching on our live stream, this will all be cut out in the main show because we hear ice,
freeze,
fridge opening,
winter,
freeze, ice. We never talked about that amazing poster that we posted to the social media 2 weeks ago, of that amazing Batman and Robin poster that had like 20,000 people that viewed it or something on our Facebook.
It was
like
really, the most really views great. We've gotten. But I do agree with whoever it was that was like,
I know, I should have been big. Free should have been
like
bigger.
Bane,
on it. Yeah,
of all people, Jeebus Swenson's fucking Bane is like the biggest guy on the poster, which, I mean, he's the best Bane there ever was.
Well, because he's green and they're trying to do that.
Hulk is on the Ragnarok poster.
So
but still. Get a little bit more creative. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is like the tiniest little thumbnail in the middle of that fucking image. It's hilarious.
Another reason why they probably did that is because Arnold has like this huge rule that you can't do artwork of him for any merchandising. It has to be a photo. So you can't like actually do like an artwork rendition of him. So maybe
what the hell is he doing? Like, they couldn't have just gone to Schwarzenegger's house and just gotten a photo of him flexing. I bet you anything, he probably puts on blue paint and just flexes in the mirror all the time and just sit there and says, "Ice winter."
He probably goes to the premiere of all these Marvel movies secretly. He's like, you know, I was in the best comic book movie ever made. This movie pales in comparison to my movie
ever of all time. Man,
I'm actually surprised that Marvel hasn't cast him in one of their movies. He could be a villain again.
He could be. He really, really could. You know what? Josh Brolin out as Thanos in Avengers 4. They're getting Schwarzenegger in there. Brolin already did like all the mocap stuff, like for the performance. Now they just need Schwarzenegger to come in and ADR over his lines. It'll be fine. This will be perfect. Don't pretend, ladies and gentlemen listening to the show right now, that that's not what you want to hear. So again, we've a jam-packed show for you guys tonight. So Justin, let's jump over into a little thing that we love to do on the show every single week. We're going to talk, ladies and gentlemen, about what we're drinking.
I'm back, puke and rally.
And Justin, I am going to punt it right over to you. What, my friend, are you pouring down your pecker sucker?
You know, I don't really find it fair that every week I have to go first, but okay. I guess I'll just
jump
keep
on
in line with the tradition. Okay, so it's been a while since I've had an Aslan beer on the show.
Ooh.
Even though I drank a whole shitload of pumpkin beers this past weekend.
God.
I was trying to make Nick happy because he loves when I drink pumpkin beers. Maybe he'll drink a pumpkin beer on the show next month for the horror challenge. Who knows? Maybe that's part of the horror challenge.
I've already got to watch all these goddamn movies because of the fitness challenge, which I haven't tabulated the miles in days now, but I already know there's got to be like another 6 I got to add to the list. So
I am drinking, Nick. Johan discovers a hammock. Now, I was a little bit weary about trying this, and for good reason. This is a double IPA conditioned on hundreds of pounds of banana and vanilla. Now, you heard me say banana. This is supposed to be like a banana pudding dream, as Aslan puts it. It's 9.4% alcohol by volume, which you don't really taste, actually.
That's not a banana-y color.
But the banana is very present, and I think this beer is a great reminder to me that I love bananas. I usually eat one a day for breakfast, but I do not like artificially flavored banana, and I don't like banana in anything else other than like if it's an actual banana.
So it's banana flavoring in it?
Well, no. They made it with bananas, but it just doesn't with the vanilla. I think the vanilla hypes up the banana too much and makes it a little too sweet for me, because when I like a banana, I like a banana like within the first couple of days. I don't like a banana at the end of its lifespan where it's so sweet, because you know how the sugar concentration
grows. You're talking banana bread bananas at that point.
Yeah, exactly. I would never drink this again. Interesting. I just wanted to try something different since I've never had a banana IPA. I've had banana stouts, which I've liked, but no, this is a one and done for me. Nick, what do you have guzzling down your gullet this evening?
All right. Well, I was telling Justin earlier tonight about IPA number 38, which was my birthday beer. I brewed it on my birthday. And, man, we're just going to go ahead. This will say it all, man. This will say it all. Not even close to my best effort. Ranks up there with the toast beer. That's how bad that one is.
Wait, is it worse than the toast beer?
It's not worse. No beer is ever going to be worse than the toast beer. No beer is ever going to be that bad. But I brewed another beer, Justin. Now, you remember Beer Cold as Fuck. You remember Beer Cold as Fuck Returns. This, Justin, is Beer Cold as Fuck Forever. There's neon lights and shit everywhere now. You get my theme.
It's the beer, right? Check state the beer. C, what's that stand for?
Cold. Oh my god. So, this is... I brewed it to be more of a session style, more of a New England style than a regular IPA. Very little upfront hopping. Almost all my hopping was done on the back end. Heavy malt presence going on in this bad boy. So, you get a light hoppiness that kind of hangs out in there. I think... Honestly, this is still a little bit young in the bottle. I only bottled it just about a week ago. I think it needs to hang out in the bottle for another week or two. This also did sit in primary for probably too long. Might have developed some off flavors or something like that. Even still, not bad. It's definitely not bad. It's got a good body to it. And I think the thing that I said the most about IPA number 38 is it has no body. It has no body to it whatsoever. And this at least does. This at least has got a little bit of... You feel like you're drinking a beer when you drink this. Not, you know, light piss water like that IPA number 38 is. It's not good. It's just not a good beer. So this is nice. I've got some saved for you. So you'll definitely be taking a couple bombers of this home.
Hooray! Whenever the hell I come up to New York again. Hey, I don't know. I am hoping for the fall season, though, because I want to bring some Virginia pumpkin beers to you and then force you to drink them.
You want to come here and go to the cider mill again and get yourself some cider and shit. That's what you want to do.
I did go there before I left. I did eat. I have to be honest. I ate a pumpkin donut from Dunkin' Donuts this last week. I did drink a pumpkin spice latte from Starbucks on Saturday. I've had 4 iced coffees from Starbucks with pumpkin sauce in it.
Pumpkin sauce.
Well, that's what they call it. It's not syrup. It's called pumpkin sauce. When you order on the app, it says pumpkin sauce. It's not part of the syrups. I don't. It's fancy. It's that's fancy schmancy shit. Wow. But I remember last year, I only had like 1 or 2 pumpkin beers because I said to you, I was like, it was right when I was really hardcore into the New England. I'm like, yeah, I'm only going to have one. I only had like 1 glass of pumpkin and it was before a show in Baltimore. This year, I'm like, oh, you know what? I kind of overdid the New England thing for a little while. I'm going to try the pumpkin again. And you started giving me shit in the dumpster. I'm going to start giving you shit back. But I think that what I want to do is come up there and find the worst pumpkin beer ever and find a reason to punish you so that way you have to drink it on the show again for the horror challenge. And I think I might just make drinking pumpkin beer part of the horror challenge this year. So we'll see if that happens, Nick.
I am a glutton for punishment because not only am I going to watch nobody. Okay, there are a couple of good films nominated on the EFG Fitness Challenge list. They will most likely make it into the rotation of movies, but mostly everyone has used this as an excuse to make me watch literally the shittiest, dumbest movies. Predator 2 is on there. I'm going to want to commit suicide watching that movie.
I don't think you like Danny Glover, though. Come on.
I do like Danny Glover. It's got
Danny Glover in it. Bill Paxton's good in it. You just edited our Predator retrospective episode that the Sauce and I did, which is up available right now for your listening pleasure.
Came out today, and I had to listen to them harass me in the B-side. For my,
did you see the image I used for the episode?
I did see the
I've been making these images just for you because I know when I put it in the Google Drive that you're about to upload this
so much. And you know what?
I did it for Goblet of Fire too.
We never even mentioned it on the show either. We haven't recorded since it broke, but I don't even really think we need to talk about it much. But there's this whole thing now where Fox had to like literally rush in and cut a scene out because Shane Black had some minor character in there.
Oh, dude. That was a sex offender.
Somebody of his was a sex offender. Now, he did his time. He went to jail. He got out of jail. It's not like he's like a wanted sex offender and people are chasing him down or whatever, but still a sex offender. But he put him into like a sex scene or something with Olivia Munn. And, you know, they shot it and they did it and everything like that. And then she came out on social media. Sterling K. Brown, I saw, came out on Twitter today in support of her and everything like that. But it's like, man, like,
I mean, I don't know how you feel about it. For me, like, man,
like,
it's, you know, I feel like stuff like this in the 90s and the 80s, no one would ever say anything about it. We are in that Me Too movement still. It's still a very important thing to a lot of people. We are also extremely sensitive to a lot of things we shouldn't be sensitive to. This is something I do understand why people are upset about. Get it. They should have told them.
That was the thing.
But it's Shane Black. Have you ever watched his movies? Do you know his dialogue? Do you know who this guy is?
Yeah.
Like, it's not something that he may even have slipped his mind. Seriously. Like, he's trying to make
a reboot.
He's, you know, a movie that's connected to movies that have it, you know, it's Predator. I don't know.
And I think
the movie's called Predator. So
you could say the whole,
connects with the whole title, right? The Predator.
Sex offender thing. You could talk about all that kind of thing and whatever. And it's important to talk about it. It really, really is. But he went to jail. He did his time and everything. But I think what people are more upset about is that they didn't know beforehand, especially Olivia Munn, who, you know, had to do a sex scene with a dude. Like, I would probably feel the same way if I did a sex scene with somebody and then after the fact find out that it's the director's buddy. Oh, yeah, he also diddled a kid once. You know, like, actually, I don't know what the actual incident was. I never read about it.
I don't know what the incident is. I didn't look too deep into it, but I'm going to tell you this much.
He was sent to prison and served his time and got out.
I'm all about forgiveness. I'm all about letting people have second chances. They should have been told about it, but is that going to stop me from seeing The Predator this weekend?
Well, no, because, that's the whole important thing, though, is that Fox went in, you know, Olivia Munn, you know, came out and said that, you know, this wasn't right. I had no idea. This is not a good thing, whatever. And, you know, she immediately went to the studio and Fox did not waste a second, went right in, cut the scenes out, boom, out, done.
They made the right decision.
Keep it in there. And I think that is the right decision.
I don't need any, if it's a sex scene, I don't need any sex scenes in a Predator movie. I'm there for the action. You're there
to see the
Predator's bloodshed.
You still get to see the Predator anyway, and the Predator has a giant vagina for a face. So it's not like you're not going to get to see lots of private parts anyway.
What I
want to
see is, I want to see the Predator after it's been beaten up. It's half dead. And one of those soldiers try to stick his dick in the Predator's mouth. He's drunk and he's like, oh, man, there's a good old. That's what I want to see. He's so drunk. He thinks he's banging a chick. It's the Predator's mouth and his dick will get eaten off. That's what I want to see in the Predator.
Tell me that Shane Black didn't shoot that scene, even if it's not in the movie. I won't believe you. I won't believe you if you tell me he didn't shoot that scene.
I'm guaranteeing you it'll be in the extras.
He definitely shot
deleted scenes.
So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a bunch of stuff to get to tonight on the show. Justin and I are going to be talking about The Nun in the next segment. I am, however, going to talk here. I got to get one of these reviews out of the way because I got three of them to get in here. All right. And I'm going to talk about Peppermint, which is an action thriller starring Jennifer Garner and, I shit you not, Latino Freddie Mercury. The haircut and the mustache legitimately exactly the same. When I saw the guy, I had to kind of do the eye rub thing, like, you know, in a cartoon or whatever. Like, they have to be like, huh, what? Like, am I legitimately spitting image for Freddie Mercury? Juan Pablo Raba is the name of the actor. And he plays the primary antagonist in the film. And ostensibly, Justin, I'm going to recommend this film. I think it was...
Whoa, wait a minute. You're going to you're the first person that I've heard say that.
It's not doing too terrible. I think it's hanging out on like a 6 or something like that on IMDb. Actually, I'm on IMDb right now. I don't know why I don't just tell you. It's a 6.7 on IMDb. It's not doing too terrible. I'll say this right out of the gate. It's exactly what the trailer promises you it is. You watch the trailer, and what do you get the impression that it's going to be?
Taken with Jennifer Garner.
Close. It's closer to Death Wish with Jennifer Garner because
it's revenge thriller.
Jennifer Garner for killing her family and whatever. The problem, and she, I said this to somebody earlier on Twitter because I was talking about the film, but she gives a way better performance than this kind of film deserves. She gives a great performance, and you buy into the emotional connection that she has with her family. So you buy into her going through this process. She disappears for 5 years, basically becomes fucking Batman. You know, whatever, and comes back to go to war with the entire fucking cartel.
Do you think that she's letting out all of her frustrations with all the shit she's gone through with Ben and his rehab and all that stuff?
Possible? Maybe. I don't know. But anyway, it's not anything that's going to shock or surprise or blow you away or anything. I do think that, you know, the villain is at least effective. He's menacing as fuck and whatever. I will say, in the trailer, this is kind of spoiled, so it's not really a spoiler or anything, but the husband and the daughter get gunned down by the gang. Like, that's the whole inciting incident. The way that you get there in the film, that the husband and the daughter end up getting gunned down by the gang, is the most convoluted, ignorant bullshit ever. What happens, Justin, you've got him tattooed on your leg, Bronson fan that you are, how does... You know, Bronson's family get fucked up in Death Wish. It's just a random event.
Yeah, they go to get groceries.
Yeah.
There are three thugs that are in the grocery store fooling around, causing trouble, raising havoc. And they witness Paul Kersey's daughter and wife getting groceries. And they're having their groceries delivered to their flat.
Yep.
So they basically take the slip that shows the address. They decide to go there, cause a little bit of trouble, and it actually turns into a rape and a murder.
Yeah, just because it's a random act.
Random act of violence. And
that's what this film should have done, but instead it doesn't do that. Instead it sets up this whole convoluted bunch of bullshit nonsense that it doesn't need to set up, because literally you're making the simplest film possible. It's legitimately Death Wish with Jennifer Garner, and she's great in it. She's really great in it. There's some really brutal fucking kills.
I guarantee
kills.
You she's better than Bruce Willis was in the Death Wish remake. Tell me.
I mean, neither of us saw it, but...
I
guarantee you this film is 10 times better than that fucking piece of shit that Bruce Willis made. Guaranteed. I'll never watch that movie, but I still guarantee that.
But you know, upon my initial reaction of seeing the trailer and seeing her in this role, this isn't something she's new to. She's done plenty of action roles
Alias,
before, so I think yeah. this is... Yep.
Elektra.
Yep. So, she's played Elektra. There was an Elektra movie, people. I know we all like to try to forget about that movie, but she was also Elektra in Daredevil. You know, but still, she's got this, you know, female action hero thing down. So, I mean, I wasn't surprised to see this, and especially after Atomic Blonde. So, do you think that she fits that? Do you think this will do well enough to do a sequel?
Maybe. Maybe. I'm not sure what the budget was in the film. I didn't look up any of the statistics. I know it did not win the box office. The Nun did. Peppermint finished second.
The Nun blew up the fucking box office.
Peppermint
Holy
finished
shit.
Second at the box office. I don't think it took in like a huge haul. I mean, it opened at the beginning of September. This is not prime box office ground here or anything. Of course, last year we did see it legitimately blow up the competition. So studios are kind of eyeing it a little bit. But regardless, it's the simplest film that you can possibly imagine. So go to this film for two things. Number one, Jennifer Garner, who is great in it. And number two, for some really cool kills. Like, there's a bunch of different kills in the film.
My interest brutal.
It's brutal as hell. Insanely fucking brutal. And she legitimately does not show any fucking mercy to any of these gang guys. Like I said, there are some just brutal ass, straight up violent as hell kills, which in this kind of a film, like when I was watching it and I saw other people comparing it to it on Twitter, I got that Death Wish vibe. I got that Bronson vibe where he's just a badass. She was just a badass in this movie, just fucking blowing bad people away. And, you know, the cops are a big role in it as well. The cops are fucking terrible. All the actors playing the cops are horrible. They're just bad. They're just not fucking good.
I mean, in a movie like this, though, I feel like there has to be some bad acting.
And you know what? I feel like it's all part of the charm. So, Peppermint, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. Because Garner's that good. Garner's that good, and the kills are that brutal. It's worth your time. But don't go into it and expect it's going to be this massive, amazing, cerebral thriller. It's not. It sets it up right at the beginning of the fucking movie. Like, you're here for an hour and like 45 minutes, whatever, to watch Jennifer Garner murder the fuck out of people. That's all it is. So
I like the sound of that.
There it is. I think you would have the same criticisms I would. I think you would still enjoy it, though, because of the brutality. Because I know you're a guy that loves your brutal action films, and because she's good. So I think you would enjoy it from that perspective. But, Justin, let's go ahead and run over here into a break for some EFG history. Officially 1 year old, this segment. Which means I'm finally pulling clips from last year's shows. That episode we did a year ago, that was it. From Andy Muschietti. Jessica Chastain wrapped already, I saw.
She wrapped a few weeks ago, yeah.
So, yeah, really, really excited for that. So, let's go ahead and run over into some EFG history, and then we'll be back to talk The Nun.
This week in epic film history.
This is the story of Bill Denbrough and his friends. Bill is a child with testicles of steel so fucking large that Trump wants to melt one of them down and build a wall between us and Mexico with it.
I fucking hate pumpkin.
Oh, it's terrible.
As a vegetable, I have an adverse, operantly conditioned reaction to eating pumpkin. So the concept of pumpkin beer, to my mind, is the worst thing in the history of the known universe.
Oh, it's terrible.
When you're doing that, if you're drinking that live on the show, I'm going to be gagging right along with you.
They can put Gypsy Danger right in the next Godzilla movie, and then it'll open with the giant robot stepping up out of the ocean and standing there like all proud, and then all of a sudden this big blue blast of atomic energy shoots through its chest and the whole fucking thing just explodes and then melts into the sea and Godzilla roars and everything.
That's a perfect idea.
And then he stomps over the wreckage of the robot, and then we never have to see or hear about the stupid, what were they called? What were they called in the movie? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
The robots, what were they called? I forget.
Come on, really? Neither of us remember?
Can you imagine Leonardo DiCaprio's bloated face and Joker makeup?
No, we talked about it last week, Lisa. It's never happened. No one wants to see it except for the studio, because they think because he won an Oscar for The Revenant because he slept with a bear, or he had a bear dick up his ass. I don't know. One of those things. He could be the Joker now.
I sucked a dick last night.
That may or may not have actually happened.
I'm back, and I am the man behind the motherfucking mask.
Are you out of control?
I'm going to get out of control. I'm definitely going to get out of control, Alice Cooper style. I'm almost positive I'm going to go into the bathroom, put on the black paint around my eyes and tease my hair up and put on a black cutoff shirt, and then I'll start screaming out the window.
Are you coming to my house?
It's entirely possible. The McAllister house may be on my list of to-go places for the evening.
Your performance as an epic film guy, you need a little work on that. But
that's what makes that theater stand out, as opposed to, you know, like an AMC or, you know, well, God forbid. I mean,
or any one of the shitty theaters that Nick goes to up there, because he lives in an area that has shitty theaters.
I went to the AMC, in fact, to watch it. When I went to sit there and...
To watch what?
To watch it.
To watch what?
To watch it.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
What movie?
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the movie It?
Oh.
Tonight.
Totally.
How many balls has Wayne touched? Things like that.
Well, I could only account for the number of balls Wayne touched when I was in the room. But otherwise, his business is his own.
And that was
as
several.
For me, it was at least four.
Check out all sorts of great moments in the show's history by searching for the hashtag EFG History on Facebook and Twitter. And now, back to the show. Every week on the show, we're going to do some fun feedback stuff, or most weeks on the show, we're going to do some fun feedback stuff. And I put the word out to people. I wanted them to describe the Epic Film Guys in six words or less. Now, I did this, Justin.
Oh, no. No, man.
I did this specifically because six words is exactly the amount of words in...
I sucked a dick last night.
So I figured somebody would pick up on it and they would be like, this must be what they're talking about. So nobody did. But we did get some really, really funny responses. Thank you, everybody that got back to us. I can't possibly read all of them on the air, but we did get some really funny ones. Jared Taylor said lisps, homesters, frogs, beers, cocks, reviews. Cocks are a theme in most of these. Patrick Sherwood said homester has his hands down pants. A good friend, Paul, from the Countdown. Speaking of Paul and the Countdown, Justin and I are going to be visiting our good friends, not in person, but audio form only. Paul and Wayne for a versus Countdown, counting down the top 10 raunchy teen comedies of all time. And if you're a patron of the show, you'll get to hear me and Justin record putting together our lists for that show, which is going to be super, super fun.
Ooh.
Paul said reviews, booze, dicks, rants, and dicks. Dicks twice. We got dicks twice in there. Gerald from Two
That's
Peas in a Pod.
Fault. I blame
Gerald,
you for
we
that.
Fucking love you, man. He said Nick hates movies. Justin likes most.
Cheers, buddy.
The Cinema Guy said, great freaking time. Beware the sauce. I agree. Beware the sauce. Julio from the Contrarians, guested on the show a few weeks back. Angry Nick, drunk Justin, young sauce. Mike, and Oscar said, wonderful, glorious, smart, funny, handsome, handsomeness. Uh-huh. That was nice. See, you guys don't all have to be dicks and talk about penises and stuff. You can just be nice.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I wish that Nick would forget about penises for once, but for some reason, just talking to him every single week brings up penises. I don't know.
Speaking of penises, the IMDb Journey said, cramming movie reviews down your cum catcher. Tom Coe said, two drunk guys talking about movies. Work Life and Balance podcast said, fuck, it's just movies and dicks.
Okay. I can support that, I guess.
Nick Justin Sauce Dicks, Hilarity Ensues from Two Girls on a Bench. Loosely based on movies. Movies, cocks, brews, and two dudes. And from Are You Okay 4711 on Twitter. It's the dog's bollocks. Top notch. So thank you, everybody. Like I said, we got a ton of different responses for that. I'm going to do different little fun stuff like that.
I like that.
Periodically as we go forward. But yeah, six words to describe the Epic Film Guys podcast. And nobody picked.
I sucked a dick last night.
Emily. Not necessary. Speaking of Emily, next
week
on the show.
Her book's in Target. Her book is on Target.com, man. Have you seen that?
I pre-ordered it on Amazon already. And speaking of her book.
I can't believe it's on Target. It's great.
Tune into the show next week. Dave and Jay are going to be here again to talk Predator. Next week on the show, we're giving away a copy of The Story Behind. Giving a copy away. You can have a copy of Emily's book, and you should already have it pre-ordered. We should have no one that we can give this to because everybody should have it pre-ordered already. But in case you have forgotten up to this point, or if you've don't pinch your goddamn nipples. Jesus.
Oh, sorry. It's getting almost to midnight. I can't help it.
Can't take him anywhere.
It may be a full moon out down here in Virginia. I don't know.
Justin, are you a nun?
I might think about it possibly, but no, I'm not.
No?
I don't think that I could not have sexual relations. I don't think that's possible for me. Or at least stick my wee-wee into something.
Can we talk, before we get into this film, can we talk for a moment about how unbelievably gorgeous Tasia Farmiga is?
We certainly can.
Can we do it? I didn't even know. I thought. Sure. I figured, okay, got to be Vera Farmiga's daughter, actually.
It's her sister. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, hey, good on her parents, keeping them boots knocking.
But yeah, they look very similar. Glad to see her in this film. However, I'll get into what I think about her actually being in the movie and how it affects the movie when we get to the review itself.
I say we talk about how you affect your face.
I mean, how my face affects me, you mean? Yeah. Not sure what you mean. Well, it's benefited me quite well over the years. I'm married now, so it doesn't really matter anyway. So I can drink beer and be fat and not care anymore. I try. No, for real, I mean, I was actually really anticipating this movie because, as you guys know from how many years ago we did the review of The Conjuring 2, not Nick, he did not watch that, but Loisos and I hold that up as one of the best horror films of the past 5 years.
The Sauce called it a perfect movie.
It still does. It's almost there for me. I love The Conjuring 2, and one of my favorite elements of The Conjuring 2 is the nun. I feel like, horror icons are few and far between in this day and age, unless they're just, you know, the same ones we've seen from the 80s that are just rebooted or in sequels. But the nun is something they came up with that is absolutely terrifying. It's chilling imagery, and the scenes in The Conjuring 2 definitely get you at the edge of your seat. So there's no surprise that they were going to go in and try to make a nun movie. They did two Annabelle movies, one really shitty Annabelle movie, and one actually really solid Annabelle movie. So here we are with The Nun. It had a really good marketing campaign. As we talked about in the show a few weeks ago, it had that YouTube ad that YouTube actually had to remove due to complaints because it had that jump scare in it where people were actually getting frightened and jumping so much after seeing it was an ad. So if you don't have YouTube Red and you're just trying to watch videos on YouTube,
people be pissing they pants.
It scared the shit out of you. So that even gained even more hype for this movie. And this is your first movie, Nick, in the Conjuring universe, right?
Yep.
So The Nun is about a priest that has a haunted past who basically has to take a nun that has not taken her vows yet to investigate the death of a young nun in Romania.
Listen.
And they have to confront a malevolent
force. I'm going to stop you right there. Stop giving me descriptions of these characters. Because they don't matter. Because the characters of this movie are legitimately like single ply toilet paper thin. Like, just nothing to them.
They're placeholders, Nick. Nothing. They're placeholders. Don't get me started. You know how frustrated I am about this movie? I'm so frustrated about this movie because the first two Conjuring movies gave us great characters. Characters that we could hold on to.
I could be holding the paper up in front of me right now and you'd still see me plain as day. That's how thin it is. I want to jump in on this before I let Justin vent his frustrations.
Go ahead.
I'm going to let stew
it. Please do it.
So for me, there's one character in this movie that works. The rest of the film, really, for me, like, whatever. I'm not the horror guy, so I don't watch a lot of horror movies. But when I watch a horror movie, I expect certain things, and I just kind of numb myself to them, and I just kind of, whatever, this is going to happen. So, like, a lot of people are complaining about the number of jump scares in this movie. I didn't notice them, really, because I think only, aside, like, there's the one, of course, trailer shot, which is, you know, kind of your prototypical jump scare, but I think there was like one other one that got me, and that was pretty much it.
Oh, really? A jump scare affected you? Like, one you of actually jumped from a scare one in this? Okay.
Because I wasn't expecting it, but it was. There's one character in this film that works for me, and it's the Abbey itself. It's the setting itself, because I believe that they do a great job turning the actual location into its own kind of character. It definitely has its own kind of character. It's a beautiful location. The production design in this film and the photography of this location, the way that they keep everything so foggy, so dark all the time, and They don't take you out of it as a viewer. You're immersed in it the whole time. So for me, it's kind of constantly tweaking up the tension a little bit. Now, you're watching blank vessels go through this movie. You're watching just legitimate, pointlessly thin characters. These two characters could be anybody. It could have been me and Justin in this movie, and it would have made as much sense. Like, it doesn't matter who the characters are, but...
It didn't show any nudity, so I mean, it could have been us. You could have put us in nun outfits or something. You could have been the priest. I could have been the nun in training.
Be the nun in training?
I mean, you look more like a priest to me.
Damn it! So, this film has a lot of issues, and I know Justin's our horror guy, so he's going to get into it from that horror perspective. But for me, I think that the atmosphere of the film alone is enough to get like barely, and I mean barely, a passing grade. Barely. The rest of it,
okay.
The plot, extremely, like, just the characters are just
there's no story here, Nick. There's zero story. Okay, so the basis of this Abbey, which again, I'm gonna come out praising it. I'm gonna go on what you had said. Cinematography by Maxime Alexandre, stunning. Stunning cinematography.
They could have had no people in this film and just had a camera moving around that fucking building, around that like that location. The sets they use,
the production design amazing. By Jennifer Spence, amazing.
Yeah,
I'm not giving any shit there. The first thing that came to mind when the first opening of this movie hit was it reminded me of an old Universal horror film, even a Hammer film, mind you, because it's set in this like castle-like abbey and it literally sucks you in. And I really have to give a lot of props to the opening sequence because in a movie like this, either the opening grabs you or it doesn't. And in this opening, it does it quite literally. It grabs you right into this forbidden area where you're not supposed to go, where these nuns are, we have to go in there and... They go in there, well, shit happens. And then we witness, spoiler alert, one of the nuns actually taking her own life, which is a chilling scene, and I really loved it. So when the movie opened, I was like, oh my God, I'm in for a treat. This is what I'm actually hoping for.
Yeah, it is a great opening sequence. It definitely does hook you.
But my problem lies with, obviously, as Nick said, there is no story in this. The characters, though pretty well portrayed by the cast... Decently portrayed, I would say.
I thought they did fine performance-wise.
They have nothing to do here. And you know what? I'm going to give you some shit, James Wan. Usually the sauce and I hold you up as one of the modern gods of horror. You were one of the co-writers on this script. You helped write this.
Well,
are you thinking that...
He wrote the story.
Well, he... Okay.
Co-wrote the story.
Whatever.
Maybe he
had
wrote,
a hand
like-
in...
Just the scary parts or just the good
outline,
parts.
The outline, whatever. I don't care. I expect a lot more from James Wan.
Yeah, you have
than
to.
What I
because
got
this
in
is
the
his,
nun.
This is his property. He developed
this
whole thing.
This is the problem. This movie is the problem with modern horror. Okay. And I'm going to go back to a review that I did in the beginning of the Epic Film Guys before we were a podcast when I went and saw Annabelle. This is, ladies and gentlemen, on the same level for me as Annabelle. Great production design, decent score, acting is pretty okay, if not better than okay. But everything else is just so formulaic. I like jump scares if they work. I know that is the formula in Hollywood for horror films today. That's what it is. I'm sure there'll be jump scares in Halloween. There were jump scares in It. There are jump scares in literally everything. I'm fine with them as long as there is a slight buildup of suspense and tension before them, and they're well executed. In this one, I saw them all coming. You gave me the same jump scare 5 or 6 times. Yep. How many times are you going to show me the nun? Slowly moving behind you. Okay, you showed it to me 3 times before. Is the 4th time supposed to work?
Here's one of my biggest problems with... The nun, the demon, whatever you want to call it. Here's the problem. Its whole goal in this film, and I don't think this is spoiling anything. I think this is as plain as day, because you know this is a prequel to The Conjuring, where it's clearly not at this abbey. So you could, its entire goal, it's set up by the cold open anyway. Its entire goal is to escape from the abbey. So you're the nun, you're the demon thing, whatever. Why do you have to be the most creepy, fuck whatever the hell thing possible. Make all this dumb, weird, crazy shit happen. Instead of, it's your goal. I mean, I get it. It's horror movies. It's what you do. But this is why horror movies don't work for me, because they trigger this thing in my brain that it's like, if all your plan is to leave, as soon as a person, you just need a person as a vessel. As soon as they show up at the fucking place, you just wait till they go to bed and you possess them and you leave. And the whole movie, you don't have to do the whole movie.
Well, malevolent spirits enjoy, they enjoy toying with human souls. They like being evil spirits. That's,
like I said, this is the kind of logistical thing that ruins horror movies for me, that makes me not buy into them the way that other people do. Some people can look past that. For me, it's one of those things that it's like, if this is all you want to do, like literally, if this is your whole point, then you're going about it the dumbest way possible.
Well, I have to bring this up real quick, and I get what you're saying, Nick, but as me being the horror guy on the show, there is immediate suspension of disbelief you have to put into most of these films going in. So, but my problem is this. There's a large exposition dump about halfway through the film where they explain where this abbey came from. This duke came and built it, and he built it and created everything and set it up just to bring in evil. So they never actually explained, or maybe I missed the one line of dialogue that explains it, why these nuns are actually there. And so they're there and they're constantly praying. We see them, they have to pray 24 hours a day in order to keep these evil spirits. Dude, leave. Go. Leave. You don't need to be there. Literally, like, they don't have a reason why they're supposed to be there. It's an abbey built for evil. Why are you there in the first place?
It just, there's no plot to speak of. Like, literally, that's the entire plot. The nun wants to get out. And it goes through the most, like, ridiculously convoluted series of steps to try to make that happen. We won't spoil the end of the movie, although you've seen The Conjuring 2. Wink, wink. So,
and you know what frustrates me even more about this is, not only did James Wan have a hand in the story, but one of the main writers on this was Gary Dauberman, who actually was one of the writers on It. He helped write Annabelle Creation. He wrote the first Annabelle. You know, he's had his hand in a bunch of stuff. Literally, this guy is a pretty good writer within the horror realm. And I feel like they just kind of sat down on this and said, we're going to take a shit on it. It's a mediary film between the bigger films, so we don't really care. It's going to make money no matter what, whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
But I didn't notice in my crowd, Nick, one single person jump up in the air. I didn't hear any screams or anything. And we even had someone in the audience dressed as the nun to spook people, and no one was really even jumping that much. I think that the film does have decent atmosphere, but only the same amount of atmosphere we get in all these other jump scare horror films that come out through and throughout the year. I have to give major props again to Bonnie Ahrens, who plays the nun wonderfully in this. Again, she's got the look. She's perfect as the nun. They just don't do enough with the character. It's literally the same thing every other scene. She's slowly gliding down the hallway. Oh, there she is behind you. Oh, we're going to show you a doorway. It's completely pitch black. There's going to be a noise.
It's because the plot is as razor thin as it is, and because there's nothing interesting going on with these characters whatsoever, so they literally just have to kind of do the same thing.
And what did you think, Nick?
Over.
What did you think of the character Frenchie?
He was fine. I didn't. You know what? There were a couple moments in the film when I think he broke the tension enough. And I think the film was,
well, that was his job. Yeah, he had to be that guy. Yeah. The first thing I thought of when he showed up is I was like, oh, this is going to be the guy that has to come in later to help save them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the guy that this is.
Exactly.
But I'm going to tell you,
it's
this
very,
much,
very
though,
telegraphed.
I really enjoyed. Yeah. There are, other than the opening, one of my favorite scenes is the graveyard scene. I know you know what I'm talking
graveyard
about.
Scene's great.
He's trying to leave the abbey, and he notices something, and he's paranoid, and he's twisting and turning around, and it's a great atmosphere. I mean, yeah, right out of a Hammer film, right out of a Universal horror film of the 1930s or 40s, and it had me. And I was like, oh, this is great. The score is good. There's, you know, spooky stuff happening.
I thought the score
in
this was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Score is great.
Really, really fit the mood.
All the technical aspects of it, all the, you know, the meat and what makes a horror movie there, made it work. It's there. Yeah. It's just frustrating because it wasn't scary. The kills weren't good enough. There wasn't a body count. This isn't a body count movie, but you didn't give me enough of like anything crazy for me to be like, okay, you gave me something. I just walked in empty and I walked out empty handed. And it, for me, it was extremely frustrating. But I'm not shocked, Nick. I'm not surprised. It is what it is. This is what I said. This is the bare bones of what Hollywood gives you when they give you a movie.
This is your insert a bunch of different criteria and churn out a generic horror movie. Boom. Basically what it is.
Bang, I think boom.
I'll recommend it barely. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 only because of the atmosphere. I think that the atmosphere, like I said, the production design, the Abbey itself, the way that they light it, everything about it, like you could have just shot that building the whole time. And by the time, like, I was creeped the fuck out when I left the theater, not because of the demons or the nuns or the kills or any of the different stuff that's going on in the movie, but just because of the Abbey. Like, it's a really affecting kind of place. Like, it really kind of does in some of those shots when you're, you know, there's not even a character on screen, but you're just seeing the different things and the way that the light is. And when they're outside the graveyard, it's a perfect example where just the mood of it is just like, you know, creepy as fuck. And that to me is worth it. That's when it's taking you as the audience member and it's immersing you in that horror experience. It's just the problem is when it immerses you in the horror experience, then it ruins it with everything else that's got going on in the movie.
You know what, Nick, I can't disagree with you 100% because it definitely immerses you. And especially what I love about it is a period piece and they do the period decently. Okay. Frenchie would not have that, you know, 5 o'clock shadow looking beard scrub and he wouldn't have the curly hair. If you're going to do the '50s, man, have him slick his fucking hair back.
Man. He's got to be sexy. There
should be no sexy. No sexy. He's trying to get a girl that's trying to be a nun to bang him. The whole movie's about his whole character is like, I just want to bang you. Yep. Dude, he just literally had the worst nightmare ever. And as soon as he wakes up and walks out his door, the first thing he sees is a girl and he's like, I want to fuck you.
They just dialogue
about him. Oh, you're a nun? Oh, not yet, huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I get it. He's an obnoxious character, but later on in the film, he serves his purpose.
Yep.
I'm just more frustrated with this film than anything else. I didn't hate the nun. I agree with you on all points. Score. Very well done. Cinematography, beautiful. Literally, the practical sets are stunning. Yeah. So for me, you know, I would not recommend this film. It's right below my recommendation grading. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Yep. Not surprising. And I know a lot of other people have come out, you know, against this film as well. And yeah, I can't disagree. I just think for me, I think that the atmosphere just, you know, pretend the characters aren't there when you watch it. Just pretend get it on Redbox or whatever, get it on streaming whenever it comes out, and just pretend the characters aren't there. Just soak in the production design of this film and the kind of the setting, the atmosphere and everything, and, you know, you'll get into it. I promise.
You don't get many movies that look like this anymore. Most movies that are horror films don't take place in medieval castles. They're all, you know, modern contemporary settings. So for me, again, I do have to appreciate that. I felt like I was taken back to the 70s or 60s when they were still doing Hammer films. So I give it that much. James Wan, though, you heavily disappointed me. And as far as the director is concerned, you know, Corin Hardy's only done one other big movie, and it was not even a big movie at all. It was The Hollow. It was actually quite a small movie. So up and comer, no hate there. He did the job that he could do. So 5 out of 10 for me. The Nun is not a recommendation.
And I want to talk briefly about Searching, because now we have seen films that incorporate modern technology into the film, but you have never seen a film quite like this that literally is told from beginning to end all through modern technology. Every single frame of this film is told through video chats, FaceTime, live streams, whatever and what have you, news reports, internet, everything. There is nothing in this film that is legitimately just a camera shooting a person or anything like that. Okay. So John Cho stars in the film and he is magnificent, magnificent in this film. So basically his 16-year-old daughter goes missing and he has to break into her laptop and he has to look for clues and try to kind of figure out what happened to her. And as he starts pulling all these different details together, gets into her different social media, streaming accounts, all these different things. Number one, as the father of a teenager, Justin, it'll freak you the fuck out.
That's why I can't watch it. I'm not sure I can watch it.
It'll freak you out because not even because of whatever happens in the movie. I'm not going to spoil any of it because you need to see this movie. It's easily the best movie that I saw over the past week. Definitely is. But it's just one of those things where the more that you learn about Margot, the daughter that goes missing, you're like, man, you think about all the fucking shit, and it's like, you can't keep your eyes on these kids all the time, and oh my God, they've got this whole breadth of this stuff at their fingertips, and they grew up with it. Like, they grew up immersed in this stuff. We only learned about it when we were younger. As we got into like our teen years and our 20s and stuff like that, like, they've lived with this stuff literally their whole lives. So it's different for them in a generational perspective. The film has a lot of really cool twists and turns. It does lag a little bit in a couple of different points. Like, it kind of drags itself out. Like, it's like, get to the point, you know. It has those moments where it's like that, but I think it's clever enough in, like I said, the way that it uses technology to tell the entire story that it, you know, it, I don't want to say that this movie has a message about modern day technology. I want to say more that it kind of embraces it as kind of part of our lives. Like, this is who we are now. This is life in the world in 2018. Your life is literally immersed in technology. You wake up, you know, there's a scene where his daughter doesn't take out the trash. So what does he do? He doesn't go to her room. He texts her, you know, and then they're trying to connect FaceTime and, you know, oh, he's sending somebody an email. He's trying to reach these other people. He's FaceTiming them or he's doing whatever else, you know, and I love the way that that makes those characters connect and interact. It's a really, really fascinating way to tell the story. I'm not really doing it justice here. I know it's kind of one of those things you've just got to see to believe, to see how well they actually pull it off, you know, because he gets to have conversations with the lead detective played by Deborah Messing all over FaceTime. And beneath all this, there's still this really great thriller here about who is Margot and what happened to her. And they kind of peel back the layers of this onion. It's a really great thriller. It does have some twists and turns. Some of the twists got me. Some of them I saw coming. It's one of those kind of movies where you'll probably be genuinely surprised at least once or twice when you pick up different facts in the film, but other times you're going to be like, yeah, yeah, that kind of makes sense because it's more of your common thriller trope. But even still, really fantastic performance from John Cho. I can't recommend this film enough. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. Go see this movie. It's really, really great. It's great. It's really,
that's
really,
a, that's
really
good.
That's
a glowing recommendation from you, an 8 out of 10.
It's great. Are you, like I said, the way that they use technology to tell the story, I can't stress this enough. There is nothing in this film that is not told from the perspective or point of view of a webcam, FaceTime, like whatever technology, it doesn't matter. There's no just actual camera on person photography in the film. It's not there. Doesn't exist, which is great. And you would think that that would get a little overwhelming or it would get a little ridiculous or it would get a little over the top. Never, ever does. It makes perfect sense for the story that they're trying to tell. And I bought it 100%. See it. I mean, definitely, definitely, definitely see this film if you haven't. Thank you all very, very much out there, by the way, for getting back to us with feedback. I did reach out to a bunch of people, especially peers that we have in the podcast community, just kind of ask them what they thought of the 60-minute Epic Film Guys experience and all positive feedback. You know, some people did say, well, I love you guys. I just want more of you. And hey, dollar a month, patron only segment. Jump over there.
And I did have one of the best experiences ever, Nick, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned this on the show.
You got to record with me, yes.
When I went to see 2001 A Space Odyssey at Alamo Drafthouse, D.C. area, in Ashburn, Bill Pruden, a longtime follower on the Instagram, and as he told me, hardcore listener of the Epic Film Guys podcast, he came up to me. It was one of the most warm experiences I've ever had from someone that listens to the show. He came up and he said, oh, you're Justin from the Epic Film Guys. And he had mentioned that he loves the show, but he also mentioned that his commute is only 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And he said, I could use some episodes cut down. So it was great hearing feedback from someone that follows and supports the show as a first timer. Great input. Thank you, Bill, very much for coming up to me and saying hello, first and foremost, and secondary for giving me input on what you'd like to hear as a listener on the show.
I can see it in your eyes.
I get it. We're your commute to work. We're your, you know, we're your way home. So that's the way it is. And yeah. if you guys want us to shorten things up, you want it longer. We know we have to try to make
you
things
have it as long as
perfect
you want.
For everybody.
You go over to the Patreon only segment of the show.
Nick, it only grows so long when you're an adult. Okay?
Is this about dicks again?
Is there an enlarger that I can get? No, I don't have access to that right now, so I can't just do that.
You,
all right,
you 100% can, and you know you can. You can't lie about it. Anything you want to say to close out the show?
Well, we did talk about earlier in the show that we may possibly do an Epic Previews segment on the
line.
Brand
it's a dirty
new
lie. I never said that.
Halloween trailer. But you know what? The Sauce and I did do a video review that's on our YouTube right now.
Show notes.
And it's on our Facebook page.
Get down them show
and
notes.
Nick unfortunately had to see the trailer, even though he didn't want to see the trailer because he doesn't want to be spoiled. He's not like me, who wants every single tasty morsel he can get of Michael Myers stabbing someone and Jamie Lee Curtis shooting a shotgun at Michael Myers, being the modern day Dr. Loomis. So we're actually going to skip that for now. But if you have any interest in seeing what the Sauce and I had to say, go check out that video. Obviously, you guys know I'm excited. I don't need to say anything more. I'm sure I'll be blabbing on about it every single episode until I get to see the film.
Hey, are you excited for Halloween?
I'm excited for the movie Halloween. I'm excited for the season of Halloween. I'm in mode right now. This is my favorite time of year. It
you
was cold
can't
today,
see,
Nick.
Unless you're watching
it was
this
cold
live.
And rainy.
Unless you're watching this live right now, you can't see. But if I look behind Justin, he has a skeleton Boston Terrier. He has a Boston Terrier and a pumpkin. He has another skull right there. There's pumpkins. There's all sorts of Halloween decorations. His house is 100% decorated already for Halloween. I bet he's got even more stuff he hasn't even put out yet. So he's... I said to somebody on Twitter, I think, earlier, I was talking to them about your quote-unquote horror boner, and I said it lasts from Labor Day till Christmas, which I think is pretty accurate.
It's true. That's totally true.
Very true.
So we're going to keep the Halloween talk for now.
It's
the
ours.
Backside, we've got you The Predator next week. We've got plenty of other movies coming up this season and horror films that we haven't talked about in the show that are coming out in the next couple weeks as well. So until next time, I am Epic Film Guy Justin.
And I am Epic Film Guy. And I am Epic Film Guy Nick. And Lori Sauce, what do you have to say for yourself?
That's a lot of cum.
I knew...
That's what he's doing tonight.
Say that. God,
that's what he's doing tonight.
Thank you very, very much, everybody out there, for listening. Show notes, go check those links down there. You can find us literally everywhere under the sun. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
Spotify,
Stitcher, Spreaker, you name it, you can find us on there. Again, YouTube, Twitch, find us.
We
literally
are podcast horrors, man. We're everywhere.
Well, I thought you said cockcast horrors, and I was like, accurate. Thank you very, very much, everybody, for listening to this, for listening to the show, for supporting the show. EFG Fitness Challenge, get over in the dumpster and join the fitness challenge. It's not too late to win a bunch of prizes and buy some swag, all to help out Perry and Lindsay Johnson. Buy shirts, water bottles, what have you, with that logo, and you'll be supporting Perry and Lindsay Johnson. Please, please, please do that. Thank you all very, very much for listening, and we we'll see
you at the movies.
Movies, 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 movies.